From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, voting fraud in Texas, how is it being done, and will voter ID stop it?
They're being hauled in buses or vans owned by the daycare centers to go vote.
It's the biggest race in the state. Ted Cruz and Paul Sadler wrestle for votes to be the next U.S. Senator from Texas, and they're breaking out the big guns.
Don't accuse me of being against the Second Amendment when you don't know me. That's just baloney, and I'm not going to stand for it.
And why celebrities need to be clean and sober when they roll through Sierra Blanca, Texas.
We get a lot of people from California and Washington and other states where they're packing their medical marijuana cards, and we have to let them know that, you know, you're not in Kansas anymore, Toto, you're in Texas.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Increasing voter turnout in the Texas Latino community is a critical issue for the state's Democratic leadership. Compared to other states with large Latino populations like California and New Mexico, the Texas Latino voting level is lackluster, to say the least. Here's Texas Democratic Party Chairman Gilberto Hinojosa.
Historically, all across America, people with lower incomes who have lower educational levels participate in the electoral process less, and Hispanics fall within that category. Hispanics haven't reached that level of cultural, making voting a cultural issue with them. In other words, making it a natural thing for families to go out and vote. It's got to reach a point where Hispanics believe that this is a normal thing to do, that you get up on election day or you get up during early vote and you go vote because you just got to do it.
Focus groups have revealed that one reason that Latinos don't vote in large numbers is that they feel the system is rigged and they don't have faith in the integrity of the election process. So why would Texas Latinos feel so strongly about election corruption? It could be because South Texas has a long and colorful history of ballot stuffing and the buying and selling of votes, a history that continues to plague the region to this day. We get more from Ben Philpott, a reporter for KUT Austin and the Texas Tribune.
Eliza Alvarado's workplace looks just like a candidate's election headquarters in the final days of a competitive race. Signs, flyers, stickers, and buttons are stacked on tables and along the walls. People are working the phones to get support. But Alvarado and her group, the Advocacy Alliance Center of Texas, aren't pushing a candidate. They're pushing a lifestyle change. She's trying to get people in the Rio Grande Valley to vote.
The statistic that we hit is 2 out of 10 vote here in the Rio Grande Valley and 6 out of 10 vote average in the state of Texas. So we want to reach 65%. We want to be 5% above the state average.
Alvarado says there's no shortage of national voter programs coming to the valley to get more people to the polls. But those programs tend to show up only every 4 years during presidential elections.
Which is great. I mean, we completely support that. However, you know, if we want this to be a cultural change and if we want this to be something that is sustained, this needs to be here. It needs to be grown here. It needs to be from someone here.
Alvarado wants to grow voter rolls by collecting as much data as possible over several years, figuring out who is and isn't voting, and even calling participants up to find out why. During her research, some people, especially young voters, have said the perception of political corruption is one reason they don't vote.
You know, a lot of people, you know, are discouraged. They say the same people get elected, you know, that they don't feel that their voice is, you know, being heard.
In Hidalgo County, some call it voter fraud or coercion or even vote harvesting. All are run through people called politiqueras. They spend the year making connections and even friendships with locals, creating a list of people who will vote the way they tell them to. They then offer that list to local candidates for a price. Rene Salinas is a longtime political activist in the eastern Hidalgo County town of Elsa.
I heard one politiquera say that she had 500 votes lined up for anybody who was willing to buy them.
And this isn't just for federal or state races. County commissions and school boards are heavily contested and use politiqueras to win elections because of the winner's ability to control hundreds of thousands of dollars in business contracts.
There is an underlying corruption as far as what these people will do to hold on to power.
Almost everyone in the county has a story of politiqueras taking money to get people to the polls, but those claims have not yet led to an investigation. Here's what is being investigated, so-called voter assistance. Under normal circumstances, it's the perfectly legal practice of letting a friend help a disabled or illiterate person to cast a ballot inside the voting booth.
In the last couple of county state elections and local school board elections, too many people are being assisted to vote. Too many, way too many.
That's Hidalgo County District Attorney Rene Guerra. He claims local adult daycares are being bought by candidates, either through friendships or cash, which leads to mass assisted voting.
They're being hauled in buses or vans owned by the daycare centers to go vote.
And it's not just the elderly being used to boost candidates' vote totals. Flores de la Ruiz is also from ELSA. She says just last week, cafeteria workers at the local school district were told by their manager they would be heading to the polls together.
The manager told the rest of the workers that if they didn't vote for the right party, that meant that they could lose their jobs.
An official for the EdCouch ELSA Independent School District told KUT they had not heard of any employee forcing workers to vote, and that it's district policy that once an employee is at work, they can't leave to vote. But the recent spike in voter assistance in Hidalgo County led District Attorney Guerra to ask his county commissioners for extra money. He wanted to hire additional investigators and convene a grand jury on illegal voter assistance. Commissioners voted to give him the funds.
You need assistance? Come and tell the grand jury why you need assistance. You don't have to tell us how you voted, but I want to know why this person assisted you. And then we're going to investigate the person who's assisting.
Guerra and others hope this investigation will end fraudulent voting, or at least lower its frequency. State Representative Aaron Pena lives in Edinburgh, in central Hidalgo. He says beyond having a clean election, limiting the perception of corruption in the valley should also help bring back voters who had given up.
They just choose not to get involved. They don't want to be involved in the process.
And it's not just voters. Pena says the system keeps good candidates from running because it can be too hard to win a race without using the politiquera system. Pena says he first ran for office to speak out against corruption. And after 8 years as a Democrat, he jumped to the Republican Party because he says it was becoming too hard to run against and fight to end the politiquera system.
And as a Republican, I feel free to criticize what's occurring. I tried it as a Democrat and was denounced for talking about our dirty laundry in the Democratic Party.
By switching parties, Pena was also able to hold on to more political power in a House that was more than two-thirds Republican. He used that power in an attempt to pass a bill changing voter assistance practices. The bill didn't pass, and Pena was attacked by members of his former party for the effort. But now the Hidalgo DA, a Democrat, has taken up the battle to limit illegal assisted voting. Pena is hopeful the DA's efforts will be a first step at changing the system. But the DA's office is, of course, an elected position.
And if you begin to attack the livelihood of this army of politiqueras and the machinery that comes out of the old boss system, you're challenging the livelihoods of a lot of people, and you're risking losing in your next election cycle.
Pena says the system can change. He knows there are good people from both parties who want to see an end to the politiqueras. But he says getting it done will take more political courage than he's ever seen. Reporting for KUT News and the Texas Tribune, I'm Ben Philpott.
The candidates for the open Texas U.S. Senate seat, Ted Cruz and Paul Sadler, are trying to position themselves as the defender of the great Texas tradition of gun ownership. Both say they oppose the reinstatement of the ban on owning assault weapons, and both Republican Cruz and Democrat Sadler have produced photos of themselves brandishing firearms. But the issue continues to smolder following last week's debate, where they tangled over the Second Amendment. From Dallas, KERA's Shelley Koffler reports that Sadler, in particular, is still fired up about the issue.
Don't accuse me of being against the Second Amendment when you don't know me. That's just baloney, and I'm not going to stand for it.
That was Paul Sadler, 2 days after his shootout with Ted Cruz over guns, hunting, and the Second Amendment. Sadler wanted Texas voters to know he's an avid hunter who strongly supports gun ownership. During an interview with KERA, he rattled off the weapons in his personal arsenal to prove it.
Well, I have a Seiko 30-06 and a Seiko 270. I have a Weatherby 300 that I went elk hunting with. I have a Remington shotgun, but my primary shotgun is a Benelli.
And Sadler went on to name three or four additional guns. Sadler's argument with Cruz over guns began in a bizarre way during last week's debate. The moderator was pressing Cruz to answer a question on immigration when the Republican shifted direction and took aim at Sadler.
Mr. Sadler has opposed Second Amendment rights. I have fought for Second Amendment rights.
What does that mean?
Sadler fired back.
Do you even own a gun, Ted?
I do.
Do you hunt?
The two continued to argue, with Cruz correctly claiming that Sadler voted against concealed handgun legislation when he was in the Texas House of Representatives. Sadler says he voted against the 1993 bill because the legislation would have made it a crime to hide the gun in a purse or vehicle glove compartment.
And I thought that it was a problem with a lot of people being charged with criminal conduct when they didn't deserve to be.
Meanwhile, Sadler challenged Cruz to prove his Texas heritage by revealing whether he hunts. When Cruz didn't answer that question during the debate, reporters asked again during a press conference.
Tell us what you hunt, and do you believe the U.S. Senator from Texas should hunt?
That's an issue he's trying to raise. I'm focused on the issues.
Being a gun owner and a hunter is just one of those boxes under the column Texan that you have to check.
SMU political science professor Cal Gilson says the importance of literally hunting for votes is as old as Texas politics.
LBJ used to hunt with the big ranchers in South and West Texas. Doff Briscoe hunted his own extensive lands in South Texas. And every politician since, including Ann Richards, had to prove her bona fides with a shotgun and a dove on the other end of it.
In 1994, for example, Governor Richards and her opponent, George W. Bush, were locked in a close race. On the first day of dove hunting season, both shouldered shotguns and put the birds in their sights. Richards hunted every year. Bush borrowed a gun, then accidentally shot an endangered killdeer and was fined $130. Bush still won the election, and Gilson says that underscores a point. In a red state like Texas, the National Rifle Association nearly always backs the Republican. In this race, for example, the NRA has endorsed Cruz. Gilson says most Second Amendment voters just assume Republicans won't support gun restrictions.
A Republican just has to be for gun ownership, even if they don't know what end of the gun the bullet comes out of.
Still, Sadler is steamed over Cruz attacking him on this issue, and he wants Cruz to fess up. What kind of weapon does he own? If he hunts, what does he hunt?
Well, it's not a prerequisite for being a senator, but if you're going to accuse me of not defending the Second Amendment, then I want to know how serious you are about it.
The Cruz campaign did respond to KERA by saying law-abiding citizens are not required to disclose the firearms they own, but anyone lawfully entering Cruz's home is likely to encounter a .357 Magnum. A spokesman adds Cruz had hoped to dove hunt over Labor Day, but his hectic campaign schedule prevented it. Shelley Koffler, KERA News.
To see those photos of Cruz and Sadler with their guns, go to KERA's website at keranews.org. And Sadler and Cruz will debate again at KERA Public Television in Dallas on October 19th. The leadership of Texas is dead set on eliminating Planned Parenthood from the Texas Women's Health Program. But what happens if they win their court battle and zero out state dollars for the Planned Parenthood clinics? Tens of thousands of low-income women across the state would lose access to contraceptives and basic health care, leading to more pregnancies and taxpayer-financed births. That's according to a new university study released this week. Leighton Koo of George Washington University is the lead researcher for the study.
Texas has a fairly large family planning program called the Women's Health Program. The state recently decided that it wanted to terminate the participation of Planned Parenthood clinics, even the Planned Parenthood clinics that don't conduct abortions. What we found was that in the areas where Planned Parenthood clinics exist, they are basically serving somewhere between half to around 80% of the women's health patients in their market areas. And the net result would be that if the Planned Parenthood clinics are excluded, what we did in our study was that we contacted other large clinics in the areas where the Planned Parenthood clinics were operating and basically said, are you prepared to increase the caseloads that you're serving? And again, they might have to increase their caseloads. They might have to double them. They might have to, in some areas, increase them by fivefold. And briefly speaking, the clinics that we contacted didn't appear to have the capacity to be able to do that. Typically, they were saying that they were already at or very close to the capacity that they have already. Some of the clinics, in many cases, are places like community health centers or public clinics that are very committed to serving low-income patients. But on the other hand, they already have shortages of funding. So as some clinics told us, gee, we only have so many staff, we only have so many waiting rooms, we really don't have the capacity to add on. What this would mean is that if the Planned Parenthood clinics, which are currently the dominant health care providers for family planning services in the Women's Health Program, if they're dropped off the program, then what would happen is that tens of thousands of women who are now getting family planning services at those clinics would be stranded without an alternative place to receive care. What we'd expect as a result of that is that we'd expect the number of unplanned births and pregnancies in Texas to go up considerably next year.
That would be because they wouldn't have access to birth control?
Because they wouldn't have access to affordable birth control. What we found is that if instead Planned Parenthood clinics were excluded and if the majority of those patients couldn't get another place to get care, we would expect the number of unplanned births in Texas to go up perhaps 2,000 to 3,000 next year. Then in addition to this, rather than saving money for the state, actually this would cost additional funds for the state. Now what I'll add is that there are a couple of lawsuits that are going on right now. The state of Texas, after it heard this, didn't agree with the federal government, so this Texas sued the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. In addition to this, Planned Parenthood clinics didn't much like the decision that the state has made, so Planned Parenthood clinics sued the state of Texas. So there are two lawsuits that are pending on this issue right now that will help determine what the eventual outcome is. If the state of Texas is successful in the policy that it has, then it could well be that Planned Parenthood clinics could be dropped off the Women's Health Program in a few weeks. The timetable is a little uncertain because of these lawsuits.
I'm told by people who support Texas policy on this that you don't have to go to one of these clinics in order to get birth control. You can go get it at your Walmart pharmacy, and it'll cost you $12.
I can't say, what services people can get at Walmart for $12. That strikes me as a little cheap. What we know is that the research for family planning services is they cost something. I mean, so typically speaking, actually, what people who are specialists in this area is they recommend something called long-acting reversible contraception methods. So those are things like IUDs. There's a shot called Depo-Provera. Those are a little more expensive, but they're more effective. Certainly the cost of being able to say that you can get everything you need for $12 strikes me as a little exaggerated. But in addition to this, we know there is a substantial amount of research that shows that actually even modest levels of copayments that women have to pay, and who we're talking about is the patients of the Women's Health Program, are low-income women, that even modest amounts actually mean that either women go without contraception or they use the least effective methods. So there have been studies that show that when contraceptives are provided on a free basis, as they are under the Women's Health Program, that really what happens is that we see a reduction in the number of abortions. We see fewer contraceptive failures, so therefore fewer unplanned births. So this notion that you can get something, an alternative for very cheap, I suspect, doesn't hold up and certainly would not be what any, public health professional would recommend as a good policy.
If a woman went to one of these clinics, they would get more than just passing out the contraceptives. There's more comprehensive health care going on.
Well, what the Women's Health Program does is it provides contraceptive services. So this means that, you know, someone like a doctor or a nurse will check the woman. A counselor may then talk to them a little more about what their specific needs are. They will provide them the contraception, the contraceptives. And this is either they'll provide them on site or they'll give them a prescription where they can go pick it up at a drugstore like a Walmart or, you know, whatever drugstore they happen to go to that's affiliated. But they'll get some additional preventive screening services. So under the Women's Health Program, women also can get screened for cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure, sexually transmitted infections. So that not only is this going to cause problems with respect to unplanned pregnancies, it could mean that some women, you don't learn that they're diabetic, or you don't learn that they have breast cancer at an early stage. So there could be much more serious health repercussions.
Leighton Koo of George Washington University is the lead researcher for the study, Deteriorating Access to Women's Health Services in Texas, Potential Effects of the Women's Health Program Affiliate Rule. The study found that the state's plan to eliminate Planned Parenthood from the Women's Health Program would hurt the health of tens of thousands of Texas women. Well, it happened again. A celebrity tour bus rolls into the West Texas town of Sierra Blanca, and then there's a drug bust that makes national headlines. The most recent one, Wednesday night, with rapper Nelly. Last month, it was singer Fiona Apple. Rusty Fleming is a spokesperson for the Hudspeth County Sheriff's Office.
You know, Interstate 10 runs from the West Coast to the East Coast. And, you know, quite often, entertainers and artists, their tour requires that they go to Houston, San Antonio, New Orleans. If they're going to any of those destinations, they're going to travel I-10. So it's not unusual at all. We get some 12,000 or more vehicles a day coming through that checkpoint. So, you know, getting tour buses, cars, pickups, whatever. And they're all required to pull over. They don't pick any of these out. They're not profiled. They're not at random. It's every single vehicle going down that highway on the eastbound side is going to get pulled into that station. The primary purpose for the station is to check U.S. citizenship. It's operated by the Department of Homeland Security, specifically the Border Patrol, and that is the primary purpose for its work is U.S. citizenship. And then secondarily, it's for smuggled narcotics or human beings.
So I guess they get drug dogs or sniff the...
Yeah, that's correct. They've got numerous canine units and their handlers that work out of that station. And they usually have a dog on almost nearly 24 hours a day. There's just very rare instances where they don't have a dog on patrol that day.
So if you've got a controlled substance in a bus and you bring the dog in, they're likely going to hit on it.
They're more than likely going to hit on it. That's correct.
But it is astonishing to hear about all the celebrities that are coming through. I mean, it seems like if I wanted to meet a celebrity that forget about hanging out at Hollywood and Vine, that I should be at the Border Patrol checkpoint in Sierra Blanca, Texas.
It would probably be an entertaining day if you just hung out there for a day or two.
Now, do the celebrities, are they astonished that they're going to be arrested for having a baggie of marijuana?
A lot of people that are amazed that 5 minutes ago they were running down the highway and now they're pulled over and they're about to be arrested. We get a lot of people from California and Washington and other states where they're packing their medical marijuana cards, and we have to let them know that, you know, you're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. You're in Texas, and this is a zero-tolerance state, and we don't honor those medical marijuana cards. And, oh, by the way, you're going to jail.
There was a singer, Fiona Apple, who apparently was not pleased with the outcome of her arrest. And she had hashish, which is not even marijuana, which is a different grade of drugs.
That's correct. And in Texas, any amount of hash is a felony.
So she,
as is the charge from last night, any amount of heroin is also a felony.
And last night, they said it was a rap star, Nelly. it was not him, but his part of his entourage who claimed possession of that.
Yeah, that's correct. When the dogs hit on, and we don't know when the dogs hit, if it's a concealed human being or narcotics that they've hit on. They obviously can't communicate that to us. So once they've hit, then the vehicle is pulled over to a secondary lane to be inspected. At that time, the agents will have all the occupants of the vehicle disembark, and they will run the dog around the vehicle again. If the dog hits again, they will then gain entry to the vehicle, and in this particular case, the seven occupants had disembarked from the vehicle, and they waited until when the dog hit on the narcotics. Then they were all taken inside the Border Patrol check station, and at that time, once the narcotics were located, they came in, and they usually offer an opportunity if anybody's going to claim it. Then they will arrest those individuals that claim it. If nobody claims it, then everybody that was on the vehicle goes to jail.
Fiona Apple, she apparently was very mouthy when she was apprehended. Is that right?
Well, I don't know what her demeanor was at the checkpoint. I could only speak to what her demeanor was here at the sheriff's office. And yeah, she got a little rowdy, a little mouthy.
So it was like a free show. I mean, a lot of people pay a lot of money to see shows with Fiona Apple.
Well, I didn't know who she was before she landed here, so I don't know what her celebrity status is.
Do you know who these people are when they show up? Do you recognize them?
Well, occasionally we do know who they are. I mean, we can recognize them, but we've had instances. I'll give you one, Armin Hammer. The movie actor. He was in our jail for 3 or 4 days, and we had no idea who he was. He never disclosed who he was or what he did for a living, and it was about 3 months after he was released that a reporter came in here searching through some records to locate other celebrities and came across this guy, and he told us who he was, and we said, well, we didn't know. It doesn't matter to us. I mean, the bottom line is, celebrity or not, if you're breaking the law, it's going to be dealt with. And if you're breaking a law that requires you to be arrested, regardless of who you are, you're going to be arrested.
And you did it to Willie Nelson.
That's correct. Willie Nelson and Snoop Dogg, Armin Hammer. There have been some sports celebrities come through here and arrested before. It happens. I don't, to this day, understand why these tour managers don't explain to their clients what goes on here if they're going to be headed down this way. But for some reason, they don't pass the word on, and another one gets busted.
Rusty Fleming is a spokesperson for the Huspeth County Sheriff's Office. The far west Texas community of Sierra Blanca has a Border Patrol checkpoint on Interstate 10, where it's not uncommon to find celebrities with illegal drugs getting busted. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. We'd like to hear your comments about the program, so send us an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website, tpr.org, and you can download the free podcast on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.